Among computer users, especially your day-to-day users that don't have a technical background, there's a certain level of fear of viruses. The truth is, most programs that are commonly referred to as viruses are not. Today we're going to talk about malicious software, or malware, on Episode 2 of the Tech Apologist Podcast. Welcome back to the Tech Apologist Podcast. Before I get started, I'd like to address the elephant in the room. Episode 1 was posted over 3 months ago. What gives? Well, a lot of things, to be honest. Vacation, followed by a drastic change in my family schedule. This podcasting schedule is going to be a little tougher to maintain than I thought. So I will endeavor to have more regular episodes from here on out, but I appreciate your understanding. I hope they'll be worth listening to when they come out, so please post your comments, either on my blog at thetechapologist.com or on my Facebook page, facebook.com/techapologist. Having said all that, let's get started. Computer viruses date back to the 1970s. They were called viruses because of the way the programs replicated themselves on the computing systems they were created on. These computers were from companies like UNIVAC and DEC, and were far less sophisticated than most cell phones are today. They were a heck of a lot larger and more costly, too. The first one, called the Creeper virus, infected Digital Equipment Corporation's computers and was eventually able to copy itself across ARPANET, the predecessor of the Internet, and display a message on a remote computer. The message said, "I'm the Creeper. Catch me if you can." Cute, but hardly destructive. As personal computers, or PCs, became more affordable and gained popularity in the 90s, so did viruses. Some notable viruses of that decade were Michelangelo, Happy 99, Melissa, and Explore Zip. The latter three were known as worms, named for their ability to navigate across computer networks. These examples were a little different in that they began to affect not only businesses, but home users using Microsoft products like Windows and Outlook. While Y2K may have been an overblown non-incident, the 21st century has been a boon for the proliferation of viruses of all types. Variations referred to as things like botnets, trojans, and rootkits became big enough that you heard them mentioned on the evening news. There are so many different variations of viruses now that they are all referred to collectively as malware, short for malicious software. Today's malware ranges from the innocuous programs that cause pop-up ads to the more heinous types that steal personal information or destroy data. For the purposes of this podcast, let's refer to them in the following three categories: botherware, scareware, and ransomware. Our first category is botherware. I call it this because, really, it's merely a bother. These types may hijack your browser homepage and take you to some annoying page trying to get you to buy something, or offering online deals. Or they might cause pop-up ads to come up every time you enter something in a search engine, or even insert their own ads inside pages that you visit often. These are generally referred to as adware, because they are trying to generate ad revenue. They are commonly bundled with downloaded software programs, both free and paid for. Again, they are not destructive, but they can be very annoying. The second category is called scareware. This malware, while still not generally destructive, pumps up the annoyance factor. It may disguise itself as antivirus or performance enhancement software, displaying false warnings of virus infections or needed software repairs. If the gullible user clicks on the links it provides to fix the make-believe problems it purports to have found, the user finds themselves purchasing software just to remove the annoyance. The third category, and the one I want to spend a little bit of time on, is by far the most dangerous, destructive, and expensive. It is referred to as ransomware. Like scareware, ransomware uses fear as a motivating factor, essentially holding the user hostage as it completely disables the computer from doing pretty much anything until a financial transaction is completed, benefiting the source of the malware. an unsuspecting user can contract these software packages from hell by visiting a web page that has become infected since their last visit, or searching for and watching a video. They even come as email attachments such as Adobe PDF or Microsoft Word documents sent from friends or coworkers. Some examples of ransomware are the FBI MoneyPack virus and the more recent CryptoLock virus. FBI MoneyPack displays a very legitimate-looking warning, complete with the FBI seal, that tells the user that they have been caught doing something they shouldn't, and to avoid prosecution, they should go to their nearest Walmart and purchase a MoneyPack card in the amount of a few hundred dollars. Until they do so, their computer is rendered non-operational. Once they have the card, they can enter the card number into the warning screen, and it is removed. CryptoLock operates in much the same way, except while it is displaying a warning screen, it is working behind the scenes, encrypting files. Not everything, mind you, just documents, spreadsheets, the stuff that you work on for hours and hours. It even traverses external drives, network drives, and encrypts those files. It promises that if payment is made in the amount of $100 or even $300 by using the ever-popular MoneyPack card, within 72 hours, and there's a handy little countdown clock there for dramatic effect, that a key will be sent that can be used to decrypt the files. If payment is not received, it claims that nobody and never will be able to restore files. Some people have claimed that they contracted CryptoLocker, paid the fee, and got their files back. Others haven't been so lucky. So do I have your attention? The problem with most of these types of malware is that most types of antivirus software is ineffective at providing protection. Once infected, they can be removed, but sometimes by then it's too late. Many times the removal process is time-consuming, involves multiple steps, and using a variety of software tools, not for the faint of heart. So, as in many areas of life, the best prevention is education. If you know these dangers exist, and you're aware, you could be careful. So here are my top 10 tips for preventing malware. Number 1. The best motto is, trust no one. If you receive an unsolicited email attachment from someone, a coworker, a boss, a friend, or a family member, do not click the link. Do not open the attachment until you have verified that they indeed sent you something. It could be a PDF document. It could look like it came from a network scanner at your office. It could be a link to a video that is, quote, just so hilarious you have to watch it. No matter who it's from, if you're not expecting an attachment from that person, do not open the attachment until you know they sent it to you. Number 2, keep your operating system and antivirus software up to date. If you're getting constant reminders that you have updates available to install, take the time and install the updates. Many of these programs are able to infect computers because they have discovered security holes in operating system software, in programs like Adobe Reader or Adobe Flash or Java. These updates plug the holes. Number 3. When using a search engine like Google or Bing, try to stay away from unfamiliar websites. Generally speaking, the longer the URL or the web address, or the more undecipherable gibberish after the .com, the more likely you're getting into unsafe territory. Number 4. Don't click on links within pop-up windows. Pop-up windows are often a product of spyware. Clicking on the window may install spyware on your computer. Instead, close these windows by clicking on the X icon in the title bar, not on the close link within the window. Or even better, activate Task Manager by using the old three-finger salute, Control-Alt-Delete, and end the questionable browser or dialog process using it. Number 5. Choose no when asked unexpected questions. Be wary of unexpected dialog boxes asking whether you want to run a particular program or perform another type of task. Always select no or cancel, or close a dialog box by, again, clicking the X icon. Number 6. Be wary of free downloadable software. Free is not free when malware installs on your computer. Many sites offer customized toolbars or free downloads, screensavers, background images, music files, and other free things. These sites often use spyware. Viruses can even be in pictures you download and save to your computer. Don't download programs or images from sites you don't trust. Another very common way of getting malware infections is the use of peer-to-peer software, such as LimeWire or FrostWire. Number 7. Don't follow email links claiming to offer anti-spyware software. Like email viruses, the links may serve the opposite purpose and actually install the spyware it claims to be eliminating. Never trust emails with links to security updates. Number 8. Adjust your browser security settings for internet zone to medium or higher. If your browser security settings are too low, you can get spyware just from visiting a website. Make sure your browser security setting is at least at medium in order to prevent spyware from getting installed when you browse the internet. Number 9. Watch out for emails from banks or shipping companies like UPS, FedEx, DHL. By the way, DHL doesn't exist anymore. These emails will look legitimate. They'll have company logos. They'll invite you to track a package or check on a shipment. But if you receive one of these emails and you haven't ordered anything, it's probably not a good idea to click on the link. Plus, always remember, if you order something, you're going to get an email from the company you ordered it from, not from the company that's shipping you the package. In other words, you'll get an email from Amazon, not from UPS. Number 10, be careful when letting others use your computer, especially if it's a work computer. For some reason, some people feel like they have to make every computer just like theirs when they use it, including changing backgrounds and screensavers, even downloading their favorite apps. Be honest with them and ask them, tell them they're free to use the internet, check their email while not opening attachments, remember, and do whatever they need to do. But please don't change anything. This goes for kids as well. If you let your child use your computer, that's fine. Stay with them. Use it as a teaching experience. It's never too early to learn how to be safe online. You know, it's no doubt that the internet has enriched the lives of millions of people, enhanced education, and built businesses worldwide. But there are dangers. Like Sergeant Phil used to say at the beginning of every episode of Hill Street Blues, be careful out there. That's all for right now. I'll put some links in the blog post for this episode that can provide some more good tips and information. Take care, practice safe computing, and I'll see you next time on The Tech Apologist.